Danny Ellis.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you for meeting with us here today to talk about SkySpecs. And you started out as a student company, is that correct?
Correct. It actually started as a student project team in 2009 by the name of the Michigan Autonomous Aerial Vehicles, abbreviated MAAV. And yes, we actually started that student team just with the goal of competing in an international competition. And in 2012, we took first place in that competition. And actually earlier that year, we had also had a chance to go out to San Francisco to pitch the idea of a company. And so we saw it as a great opportunity to go give our idea in front of a bunch of Michigan alumni and just kind of see what they think. And got great feedback, came back and founded a company based on that idea.
So you started getting money coming in at that point?
No, not at all.
Too early for that.
Yeah. We did get a $10,000 grant way early on just to help with like legal fees and business fees, you know, the simple stuff. And then the entire first summer, we were simultaneously students. Mm-hmm. And so all of us were able to pay for a living because we were actually all teaching or doing research or, funded in some other means.
Okay.
And then we competed in a few business competitions at the end of 2012 into the beginning of 2013. And actually, in the first five business competitions we competed in, we took money from. And so that money funded us through our first prototype to the point where we were able to start raising our first actual financing round from real investors. And we started that in June of this year and have targeted raising $700,000, of which we're about $500,000 completed so far.
Wow.
So that's funding us through July of next year. So we've gotten by up to this point and have been lucky enough to attract the right attention.
How many are you on your team now?
We've got 9 employees.
Are you all getting paid or is
we
it?
We are. Yep. Not very much, but enough to pay the bills.
Yeah. The research I was doing, it showed that the device has changed a lot since the beginning, I think. Is that accurate? Or?
Since the beginning of the student team, absolutely. Mm-hmm. The vehicle at the student team was built under very strict rules. So it was part of an international competition where it had to be a certain weight, a certain size, carrying a certain type of sensor. For the company, we're not restricted by any of that. We're only restricted by what we can come up with.
Mm-hmm.
And so the design had a drastic change when we converted it to a company.
Yeah.
But that design, it's evolved normally, but it hasn't made any drastic changes.
Can you describe what it is now?
Yeah. So we're building a four-rotor helicopter, commonly known as a quad-rotor. And, a lot of those are out in the market in the, remote control type setting. You can get them at toys. You can get them a little more expensive, but they're still pretty much remote control. And what we're focusing on is developing them to be completely autonomous so that you don't need a skilled pilot on the ground operating it. Anyone can pick it up. Command it where to go, you can give it a waypoint and a destination and some sort of task, and it handles the rest of the flight. So it handles all the obstacle avoidance, it carries whatever you need to carry, and we're focusing on commercial applications as opposed to military, and our first market is structural inspection.
Okay.
And so any large structure that usually a rope team or a large crane is used to access, we're flying sensors to those locations to get a non-contact inspection. Which includes normal cameras, thermal cameras, laser scanners, a lot of different types of opportunities out there. And the first one that we're pursuing is actually wind turbine inspection.
Okay.
And so right now, they use rope teams to climb down the blades looking for cracks and lightning damage. Instead of sending that guy climbing down the blade, we're going to fly sensors up around the blade to do those inspections safer, cheaper, and more frequently.
Okay. And why was it that you focused in on this kind of aspect of
this? Yeah, we did a lot of research early on what's commonly known as customer discovery in the startup world and trying to figure out exactly what our customers want,
mm-hmm.
What customers are willing to pay us for what we're designing.
Mm-hmm.
We initially decided to go non-military.
Okay.
We saw a huge opportunity that hadn't really been explored by a lot of major companies. We didn't feel like competing against the big defense contractors that are already doing this out okay. in the military. And so we saw that opportunity. We looked to see, where does our skill set correlate with customers that are willing to pay?
Mm-hmm.
And The autonomous flight really is required when you're flying next to large structures or in tight spaces or in GPS denied environments. And that's where our skill lied, was developing vehicles for that. So we approached bridge inspection and building inspection and eventually wind turbine inspection all in the beginning, and found that these customers really wanted this capability. They wanted this tool as part of their set. And stuff like aerial photography or flying in big open spaces, like that's a huge market as well. We might end up selling into that market someday too. We haven't focused on it though, because you can get a lot of that footage with a remote control vehicle. If you're a few meters off in any direction because your GPS is a little weak, you're not going to crash into anything. But if you're a few meters off in a structural inspection, that can be detrimental. So that's where we focused. And our system is more expensive because of that. And usually aerial photography is not willing to pay for our advanced system just to get a video from the sky.
Mm-hmm. So this is more expensive because it's more precise. You're getting
Yeah, it requires a lot of processors and circuitry and a lot of man hours to design the software and design the hardware and put it all together.
Mm-hmm. So yours can't be militarized, or they?
Oh, it can be. Yeah, it absolutely can be. And if the military is interested in it, we'll probably sell to them down the road. Mm-hmm. The biggest piece of advice we've gotten for selling to the military is make it commercially available and viable first.
Okay.
At that point, once you've proven it out, it's less risk to go and sell it to the military, and you can just turn and sell them a product.
Mm-hmm.
If you go directly to them, you're not only competing with the major defense contractors, but they'll also give you a really strict set of requirements, and that you could spend all of your research and development money on that.
Yeah.
So we're focused, really on the simplest early entry point to market that we can be.
Gotcha. So you don't have anything specifically against military?
Oh, no, no, yeah. No. It's definitely an enormous market for mm-hmm. robotics and mm-hmm. aerial systems. And what we probably will never sell directly to the military, but we will very easily sell to a defense contractor who will probably repurpose the vehicle in some way, ruggedize it and, put on the necessary military-grade stuff, mm-hmm. and then they'll resell it to the military.
Gotcha.
But, yeah, being a small company, it's hard to sell directly to the Department of Defense.
Yeah. One of the things at TEDx, you mentioned that there a 100-page report or something had just come out. Was it regulations? Or
it's not regulations. It's a roadmap that the FAA has released. It's basically right now, unmanned aerial vehicles are almost exclusively illegal in the United States national airspace. And they've put together a roadmap of how these regulations are going to evolve over the next 10 years.
Okay.
And so it's not just going to be like snap our fingers and all of a sudden they're legal and you can do whatever you want with them. There's going to be a lot of steps involved.
Mm-hmm.
And this outlines what they plan the steps to be.
Okay.
Still hasn't taken the first step, but it is showing that they've been thinking about it and they're putting a process in place to commercialize UAS, unmanned aerial systems, into the national airspace.
So do you have a timeline when you expect that you will be able to legally get these in the air?
The goal is that we will have some sort of type certification in 2014. And so the benefit that we have is we're flying in a very restricted area. It's next to a wind turbine. There should be no manned aircraft in that area. And so if we can get clearance from the FAA that says, we can fly in a certain number of feet from the tower on a certain day or for a certain set of days, that will hopefully allow us to get out there and fly right away.
Mm-hmm.
It probably won't be until beyond 2016 or even 2017 where there'll be a general clearance to fly.
Okay.
But there is paperwork that we can fill out to get special clearances for certain what they're calling special case scenarios.
Okay. Does that make your investors nervous that it's that far out? Or
Not really. I mean, we've taken it kind of as a competitive advantage.
Okay.
We've been working since the beginning to go through these regulations, and we've got friends in Washington, D.C. We've got friends at NASA and in other organizations that we're working with to make sure we can obtain these certifications.
Okay.
It's really helping us because, there are a lot of companies that are getting into the space and even more companies that are thinking about getting into the space. And these regulations are preventing them from doing that as well. Okay. So it gives us a little bit extra time to get our technology developed, and we've been planning for it all along. Okay. So since we're aware of it, it doesn't bother our investors. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I mean, these investors are used to high risk, so it's just another part of the process.
Yeah. One of the other things you mentioned at TEDx was that you expected these flying devices to be everywhere or have many, many, many uses, and like right. tablets and computers today. So right. Could you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, there's a lot of different reports that groups have done predicting how many vehicles are going to be flying in the United States over the next 10 to 20 years. The most recent prediction that I read said that by like 2035, they expect 175,000 of these systems just in the United States airspace alone. That could be as small as ours or even smaller into the micro and nano scales. Mm-hmm. Or it could be, you know, UPS shipping cargo on a full-scale airplane that doesn't have a pilot on board. You know, that's, you know, the range is endless as to what they're going to do without humans on board. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, even as they become cheaper and more available to everybody, people are coming up with, you know, as many ideas as you can possibly imagine to use these things for. I actually had a guy call us that he wanted to see if we could put a fish finder on it, fly it out over the ocean, and use it for his charter fishing boat. Ah. So it's, you know, it's whatever people can dream of, they're going to be able to utilize these systems for.
Is there something specific that has to happen before that can take place?
With regards to the regulations or technology?
Both.
Both? Well, with regard to the regulations, the FAA is going to have to figure out what the regulations are. You know, right now there are no regulations, and so therefore the default regulation is military airspace only, and so we can't fly in civilian airspace. Now, hobbyists can fly, but the distinction being you cannot make money or do anything for hire, even if you're not directly selling your system in the United States airspace. So that's going to have to change first for, you know, most people to be able to use this for a commercial purpose. Mm-hmm. Technology-wise, it's actually got a long ways to go. They're really, you know, quite advanced, and they've become far more advanced even just the last 5 years. But in order to be as safe as manned aircraft are, there's going to be a lot of technological advances. One of the challenges being a majority of systems out there, they can't sense their environment. And so you can send them on, you know, some sort of mission, and they can run into things pretty easily, whether it be a static object or a moving object in the airspace. Mm-hmm. And so a lot of research is going into, you know, how do we make these systems more aware of their environment and how do we make them safer.
Okay. Can you tell me a little bit about yourself? You're from Portage?
I am from Portage. Yeah. I went to Portage Central High School. And so I graduated here in 2006. And then I went on to the University of Michigan and studied aerospace engineering, both for my undergrad and graduate work. So I graduated there with a master's last year in 2013. Yeah, so it's actually, I spent a long time in grad school, 3 years for a one-year program. But I taught while I was doing that. I was running the student team, and I was paid to go. So I wasn't really losing anything by taking one class at a time and starting the business. So Michigan actually was a fantastic place for an incubator for our company. And me and the other partners were the same way. They were all teaching or doing research, you know, and doing grad school simultaneously. A lot of us never planned on staying for grad school, or if we did, it wasn't for this purpose. And then, you know, it was a very easy choice for us to make in order to, you know, take our technology we wanted to. Yeah. One of my other partners is also from the area. He's from Three Rivers. And we actually met here working for Parker Hannifin here in Kalamazoo many, many years ago. And we were kind of joking about starting a company while we were working there at an internship. Came up with a bunch of just terrible ideas. But, you know, lo and behold, we eventually went through and did that.
Yeah. Is the project still at U of M, or have you moved out of there?
The Michigan Autonomous Aerial Vehicles team still exists. We have... So SkySpecs is separate from that.
Okay.
But the original founders of the student team are the founders of SkySpecs. And so we've been together as a cohesive team since 2009. But we did kind of pass the reins along to younger students, and so they're running it. They're going to a different competition now. The competition we were in is over. And the team just continues to grow and gain momentum. And we've hired interns out of the team now. So it's a great place for us to get trained people that know what they're doing. So team keeps growing. SkySpecs is still located in Ann Arbor. We were incubating at the university until this summer. And then we've moved into our own warehouse now. So the investment round allowed us to get some money to actually, you know, pay rent at our own building. Yeah. So that was a big step for us.
Is there a next step for the company, or is it just keep...
Yeah, there's always a next step. The step right now is to get our prototype working in the field. Okay. So it's been flying in our facilities in an indoor environment, but we need to run it through a lot of tests to make sure we're confident it's going to work in the field. And then take it out in the field and actually test it there. And, you know, we've never flown it near a blade of a wind turbine before. Mm. You know, we kind of know what to expect. But then again, you know, until we actually do it, we know there's going to be some things we're going to have to change. Yeah. So we're partnering with a company in the wind turbine inspection market. And we're actually going out to meet them and visit them in January. We're setting up a pilot program with them where we're going to, you know, spend a few months out in the field with them. Where we're just testing our vehicle. And then once we're confident in that, we turn it over to them and, you know, they're our first customer. Mm-hmm. So that's the big next step.
Right.
And then see how that goes and then start moving into some of these other markets that we've projected.
Would you like to address the question of privacy?
Yeah, absolutely. We're taking a very proactive approach about it. We realize that privacy is a major issue and there are no specific laws around using systems like this, you know, for bad purposes, let's say. It could be anything. Our system, first off, the first thing we did is it's painted white for a reason. Okay. And it's actually built out of carbon fiber, so it's black and looks menacing until we paint it white and make it look friendly. And so we're, you know, one of our phrases here is that we're building a safe, friendly UAV. And, you know, we want people to feel safe around it, know that we're not collecting data against them. And for that reason, we're actually leasing our vehicles to our customers. So we will maintain ownership of them at all times. We'll be able to log where they fly, what their purpose is of flying there, what data they've collected. So we were not going to be, you know, giving that data away, make sure our customers' data is protected. But, you know, if law enforcement needs to see it for any reason, we have access to it to prove that it was not used, you know, with ill intent. And if it was by one of our customers, it'll breach their contract. It'll protect us, but it also, you know, we'll be able to say for certainty that we know where it was flown. Mm-hmm. You know? So we don't want it to get off into the wrong hands by any means. We'll also have the ability to shut them down. So from our location, if they don't get the proper code to fly, they will not fly. Mm-hmm. And so we can make sure they stay grounded if they need to.